one woman who I spoke to, and she'd been a lawyer, married, recently had a child, and she messaged me and she said, recently I feel like after having a child, I've lost a piece of myself and I'm kind of a shadow of who I was rather than me. But I come onto Mali and I feel like I can be that person again.
My name is Esprit Devorah, host of the Women in Tech Show. The show means a lot to me. The reason why I wanted to create the Women in Tech Show is I wanted to create a positive piece of content, something where people can listen and say, if she can do it, so can I. I call it actionable empowerment. Every single episode, you'll hear the story of a fantastic woman in tech, from engineers to founders to investors to journalists to designers, all sorts of different females in tech who have thrived. I want to share their stories with you so that you can know what resources, mentors, and life situations they accessed in order to get to where they are today. Enjoy.
Welcome back to the Women in Tech Podcast. This is Esprit. As you guys know, I am traveling, meeting incredible women in tech around Europe. And right now I am in London, England, and I have someone awesome to introduce you to. So go ahead and introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your company.
My name is Nafisa Bakar, and I'm one of the co-founders and the CEO of Amalia. And what Amalia does is it's a platform for Muslim women, and we create content that is culturally relevant to Muslim women, from fashion to beauty to lifestyle to global affairs. And really what our platform is about is surfacing the real stories of Muslim women unedited.
This is so, okay, first of all, when was the company founded?
We launched last, so in 2016, January. So just over
recently.
Yeah, oh my gosh,
so exciting. You just had your 1 year anniversary.
Yeah.
And what inspired you to create the company?
So when we started very much as an e-commerce sort of platform where we would curate the best in modest fashion for Muslim women. So women who wanted to cover up and still look good. And I'm not from a fashion background, but I realized that for Muslim women to actually find clothes that they felt were modest and didn't compromise their values, but they were fashionable, was actually a really hard process.
And are you Muslim?
Yes, okay. I am. That's keep up. And so I thought, actually, I have two options. I can either moan about it or I can do something.
Right. Amen.
Yeah. So we started really trying to solve that pain point, and we grew a community around it. And that's kind of where we've evolved into becoming more than a fashion platform and really representing the many different facets of Muslim women.
And what would you say was the most kind of challenging thing in becoming a founder?
I think the most challenging thing, without a doubt, is being able to convince yourself that you can. Because I'm not from a tech background or fashion background or startup background. I didn't know how to code. I didn't really have a network. And I'd constantly look around at other founders and be like, oh, but I could never be like that, or I could never do what they're doing. And I always held everyone else on a pedestal. And I never thought I could be that person. Although Amalia has only existed for just over a year, the idea or the concept in my head had existed for a lot longer than that. And in that time, it was just about me building up my own confidence and kind of telling myself that actually you can do it too.
I love that. I mean, it's the whole concept behind the Women in Tech podcast, yeah. Right? It's like, yeah, like you can do it.
Yeah.
It's totally possible. And it's about believing that it's possible. And so, okay, starting your own company is really hard.
Yeah.
And first off, I imagine you have so many beautiful images on your website,
yep,
for people to see because it's fashion. So what? Let's share with everybody where they can go and kind of like, yep, check it out while we're having this conversation.
So you can go to amalia.com. We're also on Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat, Facebook. We're all under amalia.com there.
And can you spell it?
AMALIAH.com.
Perfect. And so you guys feel free to check it out. And you know what? While we're at it, so you're on Twitter, Instagram, all of them.
Yep.
So if you want to kind of like, you know, go through the social web and see who we're talking about, go for it. And are you on Pinterest too?
Yes, we are on Pinterest.
Okay. Because Pinterest, I mean, for fashion.
Yeah, it's
okay,
amazing.
Cool. So what would you say is something that you access, like a resource you access, we're here in London, to help you become a stronger founder?
So resources here, really, I think it's been down to people. Mm. So I've kind of immersed myself in as many different networks as I can. And the first network that really helped me and is why we were able to start was Founders and Coders. Mm-hmm. So Founders and Coders is a 14-week boot camp. And what they do is they're free boot camp.
Amazing.
And they take people with no background in tech or computer science, and in the 14 weeks turn you into a junior developer.
Really?
Why for free? Because so the founder, Dan, he's very passionate about the fact that you shouldn't have to go to university and pay 50K to be able to access the tech world and be a junior developer. So the way they run the program is what they do is your first half is very much you're learning about the whole stack. You become a full stack developer. And then the second half, you're working on real life projects where you're getting paid. And founders and coders take a bit of commission off each project. So that's how they run their projects. So for them, they're really trying to lower the barrier to entry, basically.
And who funds it?
They fund themselves. So
you should see my face right now. I'm moving to London. And it's you said it was called Founders and Coders?
Founders and Coders,
you guys will totally include it in the show notes. What is the... I mean, I want to know for myself, though. What's the application process?
So the application process, there's quite a lot of prerequisites you have to do where you're basically doing lots of different exercise, stuff like Code Wars. I don't know if you've ever heard of them. And you're basically proving that, A, you're committed enough to be able to be on the program, because one of the key things is they don't actually have any teaching stuff. What happens is it's very group based. So when you're on the cohort, there's 16 people, you're in groups of four, and every week you're fulfilling a brief. And it thrives on just everyone helping each other. Right. And then previous cohorts will come back and kind of help each cohort. So the culture of Founders and Coders is amazing. It's all about experiential learning, about helping each other. And I guess that's kind of what being a developer is like as well, right? No one's ever really going to tell you and teach you how to do stuff. You just got to figure it out.
Yeah. This is so cool. I totally want to do this.
They just opened up a branch in Nazareth, so they're kind of expanding now.
And where is that?
In Israel.
Perfect. And one term you brought up was Code Wars. Yeah. What is Code Wars?
So Code Wars, you basically solve different problem sets, but it's meant to be in a fun way. So you learn to code while having some fun.
I love it. Yeah. And how large is your team?
Our team is currently...
I love how she's looking out the window.
Because we are hiring and we've got quite a few people who aren't core-based here. So our core-based team here are four people. But we've got over 50 content contributors that contribute to the platform.
So cool.
And we are hiring at the moment, so...
How can people interview with you? Apply, yeah.
Literally reach out to me. My email is nafisa@amalia.com. That's nafisa@amalia.com. And to be honest, even if you feel so, the two key roles we're hiring for now is head of video content and a marketing person. But if you just feel like you have something to bring to the table or you're really inspired by a mission, then just reach out and I'm happy to have a chat.
So who are the four core people on your team?
So there's myself, my sister, who's my co-founder, and she currently oversees marketing, community management. She's the one who onboards all our amazing writers and content contributors. There's Amna, who is our fashion and beauty editor. And then there's Fahim, who is our developer, who just joined last month.
And, okay, this is something that I have a personal thing with, so I'd love to talk to you about it. Mm-hmm. What have you found is the most effective way to manage a team? Have a manager or are you still the manager?
I'm still the manager.
Okay, this is a huge challenge for me.
Let's chat. I think it's really interesting. And I chaired an event for us two earlier this year. And one of the panelists was Sitar Telly, who founded a VC, as you do. And she has invested in CityMapper, SoundCloud, Boilerman, quite big names. And she said one of the things founders don't realize is really your role is about managing, and most founders aren't ready for that. Mm-mm. And I think as our team is growing, that's something I'm struggling with. and you realize leading versus managing are
two totally different things.
And while founders can lead because you know it's in them, they're on a mission, they're leading it, they're like, right, I'm going to rally everyone up.
Yeah.
Ask them what their milestones are and how they're doing and when they're going to get to their milestone, all those things. They're like, I don't know, but we're on a mission and we're doing really well, right? Yeah. So actually for me, that's one of my biggest challenges at the moment. So I don't think I've figured out how to effectively do it.
Yeah.
But one of the things I have realized is when it comes to managing, a lot of the times you feel like you as the founder or the CEO, whatever you are, needs to have all the answers.
Right.
But I think part of effective management, especially early stage in a startup, is pushing some of the responsibility back onto the team and saying, actually, I'm not the only one that's going to come up with the solutions. What does everyone else think?
Right.
And I think, it takes a burden off you and it also is more inclusive for your whole team.
Right.
I'm still figuring that one out.
It's so tough. It's so nice, though, and I think it's nice for everybody listening to hear that it's a thing. It is, being a manager and being a leader is two different things. And sometimes the founder has to be both and that they're not the same thing. And it's not, I think going through the journey of being in the startup world, it can feel very isolating.
Yeah.
And that we always have to be perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
And to hear this candid moment of vulnerability from the both of us. And then so, you listening can be like, oh, okay.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Because even like we do roundtables here with all the other startups and there's another startup and there's about 8 of them. And so I turned to the founder. I said, oh, so you guys have a team of 8. How do you manage your team? And then the team just looked at each other and started laughing. And they're like, yeah, it's a problem we're having at the moment. And I think it's that whole pedestal thing, right? Yeah. You look around and you're like, oh, everyone's got it figured out.
Yeah.
But you realize everyone's in the same shit boat as you.
Yeah. Like, so hard.
No one knows what they're doing, really.
So hard. So hard. And you mentioned that you have 50 contributors to your site. So you have a little taste of it. What do you think about having a remote team versus an in-person team?
I think they serve different purposes. So for me, I think I wouldn't be able to work remotely with my core team because I am very energized by being around my team, working together, being able to just break out into a room and start brainstorming and talking.
Right.
Whereas with contributors, because they're working more on an ad hoc basis and they're not working on Amalu day in, day out, I feel like it's easier to be remote with them.
Right.
So for me, just the way I work, I think if I was working by myself and everyone else was remote, I think mentally I'd find it really difficult.
Right.
And I think it magnifies your own problems because you only have yourself to soundboard off. So.
Yeah. What would you say is the mentality you use to overcome challenges?
My mentality to use to overcome challenges is it's never impossible.
I love that.
Yeah,
everything's possible.
Yeah, because like when you think about, like if you think about the things you're finding hard in your life at the moment, they're not impossible, they're just freaking hard, right?
Yeah.
And what I also tell myself, I'm just like, look, just keep moving forward, right? Whatever it is, just keep moving forward. Do something so you feel like you've moving forward just a little bit.
Right.
And I think those two sort of mindsets can help you push quite far.
Mm-hmm.
And
do you feel like it's so interesting in the startup culture, it's kind of like we have no rules. It's the wild, wild west. Do you have like office hours for your team? Like how do you set up the organization of the structure behind running a new company?
So really our organization is around communication. What I find is every so often, like every probably month or 2 months, we kind of get together and we kind of realign to get on the same page. Because I think you're constantly, especially so early on, you're constantly moving at any given time. You could do so many different activities.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's really important to kind of pull everyone back every so often and be like, okay, are we all on the same page? Are we working to the same goal? Because I think it's very easy to feel busy and to feel like, oh, I've got loads of things to do. But you're not actually all pushing together on the same wavelength.
Totally.
So, yeah.
Because we're sitting together in your office and you are a year-old company.
Yeah.
So it's interesting you decided to get an office space. So that's why I was wondering about structure. Like having an office space itself, the 4 core members here is already structured.
Yeah.
And so do they have to show up at like 9 a.m. and stay till 5 p.m.?
So we don't have set times. It's just really come in and leave and do what you need to do, so basically.
And have you raised money?
Yeah. So you have. Raised over last summer and we closed our seed round in September.
Amazing. Congratulations. Yeah, how much did you raise?
So we raised just over 200,000.
It's awesome. Thank it's an awesome start. Yeah. It's, I mean, it's amazing. And, I can't get away without asking this because I'm personally like really excited about this myself. How has your company positively impacted the women who purchase your clothing? Like, do you have some stories you can share with us?
Yeah, definitely. So like, I normally reach out to the community every now and then, be like, oh, hey, how's it going? What are we up to? How, you know, what do you think of Mali and where we're going? And the stories range from, like, there's this one woman who I spoke to, and she'd been a lawyer for over 10, 20 years, married, recently had a child, and she messaged me and she said, recently, I feel like after having a child, I've lost a piece of myself and I'm kind of a shadow of who I was rather than me, because all her energy is going into her child and being a mum, and it's a tough job, right?
Wow.
And she said, I feel like, you know, when she used to work in the corporate world, she was always dressed up. She looked really nice. She always looked amazing.
Yeah.
And she felt like she'd lost that part of herself. Yeah. And she said, but I come onto Mali and I feel like I can be that person again. And for me, I was, because when she worked in the corporate world, she wasn't practicing. She didn't dress modestly. Right. And so she'd made that transition, but she'd also made that transition at a time where she was a mother.
Right.
And I guess she was feeling quite lost in her identity and kind of like, who I am, who am I now as a Muslim mum, basically. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it was just so endearing and nice to feel like you've actually helped someone with their confidence and their own identity.
Yeah.
And even, you know, we've had people messaging us and talking to us about how when they're going to things like an interview where you want to look good, but you don't want to look frumpy because you're trying to look modest and things like that.
Right.
And, you know, one of the things someone once said to me is they were preparing for an interview and they're like, I was thinking more about what I was going to wear rather than what I was going to say. And that's because they were having this whole like, oh, and I've been there as well. Like, oh, but if I wear a skirt, my bust going to be out.
But
I don't want to kill it with a long cardigan.
Totally.
And, you know, for her, Amalia was like, oh, I can actually look good and still retain my own identity and my values.
Yeah.
And I think that's when I realized that actually it's beyond fashion. It's about empowering Muslim women in their own identity and saying, actually, it's okay to be a Muslim woman. And that's kind of where we've expanded into covering more than fashion and just covering different aspects.
Yeah. And how did you come up with the name?
So I'd built the first version of the site. We hadn't bought a domain. We needed to buy a domain.
How did you build the first version of that URL? What did you build it on? What was the URL?
I just built it locally.
Because you learned how to do it.
Yeah.
Founders
and coders. And so we literally got a list of Arabic baby names and then we came across Amalia and it meant aspirational.
It's really beautiful. It's a beautiful name, yeah.
Obviously, we didn't get past A. And when I saw the meaning, I was like, right, that's it.
I love it. Yeah. Inspirational. And what do you code in?
So I used to code in HTML, CSS, JavaScript. So that was basically the stack that founders and coders use. So they're JavaScript-based program.
What, if you don't mind, describe for us what stack is.
So stack is basically the different languages. So some people will build on the back end in a different language, or some people will build just in Ruby and Rails.
Yeah.
So there's different boot camps who offer different stacks, basically.
Right, right.
And it's basically what you use on the front, what you use in the back, what you use to build stuff.
Right.
So they call the founders and coders call JavaScript the language of the web, and they feel like it was the most flexible for you to be able to build what you want. But I've also learned Rails before as well.
Ruby on Rails is actually my favorite.
Oh, yeah. Cool. It's very like powerful. You can do a lot with it.
So. Yeah. And this is probably for some of you getting like super too technical already, but again, this is why the show exists. Check out Founders and Coders.
Mm-hmm.
We'll include it in the show notes. It's all about discovering the resources so that we can get more educated and start to solve our
own. Even if you're not thinking of joining the bootcamp, but you want to learn to code, even just going through the prerequisites, because it's from a total beginner stage and just working your way up.
Totally.
So.
And if I remember it right, there's a site called 1 Month Rails or something like that.
Yeah,
Do you know what I'm talking about?
There's a book, yeah.
Yeah, I will include in the show notes. I will, like, look it up. But there's, like, a way to, like, learn Rails real quick. You know, just There's general assembly.
There's loads of like Coursera courses that are all free, totally run by Harvard. So
totally. Anyway, thank you so much. Is there anything that I haven't said yet that you want to share with everybody?
No, I don't think so.
I know one more thing. Okay. What would you say is something you've learned about yourself in achieving your dreams?
I've learned that it's okay to be an introvert. Yeah, because I think my idea of who you had to be to make it in the startup world was you had to be this extrovert, this like borderline like slimy salesman. Yeah. You had to be really good at bullshitting, yeah, all these things. And then I realized that actually people do business with people, and the more you can be your true self, the more people resonate with you and the more people will get on with you. I think most people have really good authenticity detectors, and you can just instantly tell if someone is putting on a front or if they are who they are. And I think especially like the nature of our company is very Muslim facing. We are for Muslim women. I think if anything, I've become very confident in who I am, and you know, this is who I am, this is my values, this is my beliefs. And just learning to be, you can get to where you want to be by being totally unapologetic about who you are.
So cool. So, yeah. I love that. That was a great note to end on. Thank you so much for spending your time with the Women in Tech podcast. You guys, if you want to connect with more awesome women in tech, be sure to go to the Women in Tech Facebook group, which you could find by going to womenintechvip.com. That's womenintechvip.com. Takes you straight to the Facebook group. And you know, you can always tweet at me at Esprit Devora or at Women in Tech Show. What's your personal Twitter handle?
My Twitter is @Nafisa_Bakar.
Can you spell it?
Yeah. @NAFISA_BAKKAR.
Perfect. I'll see you guys, hear you guys in the next episode. Bye.
To be notified every time a new Women in Tech episode is released, simply text Women in Tech to 310-872-2423. That's 310-872-2423. To support the Women in Tech Show, it's super easy. All you need to do is start doing your Amazon shopping by clicking on this link first, womenintechshow.com/Amazon. That's womenintechshow.com/Amazon. The Women in Tech Show is hosted by Esprit Devora, edited by MKW Films, show notes provided by Carl Marty, music by Jay Huffman Live. The Women in Tech Show is a WeAreTech.fm production.